Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, June 20th. I'm Jordan Pangelinan reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Juneteenth weekend celebration with Black Humboldt and Eureka Greenway regulations get initial approval. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Humboldt's 7th annual Juneteenth Cultural Festival, put on by Black Humboldt, started June 19th and ends this Sunday, June 23rd. The multi-day cultural festival will create safe and inclusive spaces for the Black and BIPOC community. KMUD News spoke with Rosemary Grady, an educational and resource liaison for Black Humboldt, to learn more about their mission here in Humboldt County and what to expect at this weekend's festival.
Black Humboldt is a local nonprofit, again, created by two really beautiful and amazing Black women who saw a need for community here in Humboldt County, Black community that existed outside of the college. For many of us who were immigrants of this community, migrants, we didn't really have a stepping stone of the college to get us into Black community or just create those really important connections. And so Black Humboldt started as just like a pop-up of like, hey, I see you and I want to know you and I want to create community with you because it is so important. We live in a predominantly white community. Black folks are about 2% of the population here. And so when you come from really diverse places in California, like the Bay Area or Southern California, LA area, it's really a culture shock. And so I think it was a call of like the necessity of needing Black community, of needing like Black family and like the representation and sustainability and stability of like Black business. But yeah, Black Humboldt's mission is to empower and enlighten and entertain the Black community through events made for us and by us. And so for a long time, it was just a mixer, a monthly mixer where Black folks would, you know, come get together and have a necessary space for themselves to exist outside of a white gaze.
Juneteenth is a day that celebrates diversity, community, and Black liberation. This holiday is one that is very important and empowering for Black and Brown communities all over the United States, but especially for Humboldt County, as Black people currently only make up 2% of the population.
Historically, Juneteenth is the American holiday. It commemorates June 19th, 1865. That was the announcement of the abolition of slavery and the emancipation of enslaved African Americans throughout the former Confederate states. June 19th, 1865 was when the news had finally reached practically, you know, every enslaved person at that point. And so it's a celebration, right? It's a call to our freedom and our continued liberation. It's about joy, about family, about culture. And it's so important, especially in Humboldt County, where there wasn't a Juneteenth festival before Black Humboldt was created and, you know, really impacted the community by bringing their first Juneteenth festival to Humboldt County.
The event will feature local Black vendors, workshop facilitators, music performances, and informational knowledge for power sessions. This event is a learning opportunity to highlight American history, as well as an opportunity to support the BIPOC community and help create and maintain representation as an equal part of the Humboldt County community.
It's a day to spend in community. It's a cultural exchange. So many folks who, you know, are interested in Black Humboldt, want to support Black Humboldt, are allies of Black Humboldt, want to be involved and want to fully understand that Black Humboldt is a space for Black and Brown people to be in community, to exist and thrive and heal. And they're like, how can we support? And, you know, we have cultural events and we have community events that are open for everyone. And a lot of our events, too, that we throw are exclusive spaces that are just for Black and Brown community to connect.
Grady gives a rundown of this weekend's events and schedule.
It starts off with like a kickoff on Juneteenth proper, which is Thursday, June 19th. I was like, everyone has the day off or should have the day off. And so we're celebrating with a BSU barbecue at Jefferson Community Center. It's all ages from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. in Eureka. So come through. It's a family fun event. We'll have fun music, kids, games, blacked out on the barbecue, like having all the things. And so that's going to be a really great event, all ages on Thursday, June 19th. The nighttime events for that day for Juneteenth proper is that we are going to take over Richard's Goat for their karaoke night. And so we're going to do a little fun old school versus new school hip hop, rap, R&B, you know, find your favorite era, right? Dress to impress, find your song, and then come through and hang out with us. That's going to be, again, at Rich's Go, 8 p.m. is when it starts, and then we're there till late. So that's going to be a fun time. Friday night, we're taking over the market at the Friday Night Markets. We'll be at the Old Town Gazebo. We'll have our People's Mic. We'll have Black and Brown performers there. Poets. It should be a really great time. Also, all ages. And then Saturday, June 21st, we have our Juneteenth Festival, 12 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Halverson Park. And we'll have food trucks and vendors, speakers and performances. We'll have our little beer garden. We'll have our kids zone. The sun is going to be shining. I know it is. And the wind's going to be super chill. And we're just going to have a really beautiful day that day. And so, yeah, I hope everyone's able to come out and support us, support the community, but also just be able to be in joy and share together.
This event is open to anyone and everyone. This is an opportunity to be involved in cross-cultural practices and educate yourself further. If you'd like to know more information on the event and scheduling, visit blackhumboldt.com/Juneteenth-celebration. On June 18th, 2024, at approximately 5:36 p.m., EPD patrol officers responded to the report of a sexual assault, which just occurred. The survivor stated a food service delivery driver arrived at their residence with an order, forced his way into their residence, and made unwanted sexual contact with them. During the investigation, officers located the suspect, 27-year-old Arda Kizalai, who was taken into custody for sexual battery and burglary. Kizalai was booked into the Humboldt County Correction Facility. KMUD News reached out to EPD for a comment, but was not given a response by News Time. We will bring more information as the story evolves. Despite controversy, the Eureka City Council supports a new ordinance protecting its gulch greenways. Daniel Mintz reports.
Eureka is on its way to approving new regulations protecting its trademark gulch areas over the objections of some property owners. At its June 17th meeting, the City Council voted to introduce a new gulch greenway ordinance. Two council members, Scott Bauer and Mario Fernandez, recused themselves, along with Mayor Kim Burgell, due to living within or near affected areas. The ordinance aligns with the city's general plan and state law. But the majority of those who spoke during a lengthy public comment period said the ordinance is too broad, unnecessary, and will be burdensome to comply with. Several said the city should focus on preventing homeless people from living in the gulches, describing that as having greater impact than development. Development Services Director Kristen Kenyon cited a general plan policy that the ordinance implements.
This ordinance helps implement a variety of general plan policies, including policy NR 2.2, which specifically calls on the city to adopt Gulch Greenway preservation and management guidelines that identify and protect sensitive species habitat and the hydrologic capacity of Eureka's gulches and greenways. Our general plan looks forward till 2040, and it was adopted along with an environmental impact report that analyzed city population growth through 2040, and it relied on implementation of these policies for a finding of no significant impact of planned growth on wildlife movement, riparian habitat, sensitive species, and biological resources.
Kenyon's presentation also included a summary of a 2022 survey that showed 75% of respondents said they find fish and wildlife habitat and passage value to be the highest benefit of the Greenway Gulches. Another important survey takeaway is that 83% named illegal dumping and encampments is the most concerning threat to greenways. The ordinance designates a Gulch Greenway Overlay Zone that includes 1,697 parcels. The zone is described as, quote, a screening tool triggering site-specific evaluation when development is proposed. Gulch Greenway Management Areas apply to portions of parcels within 50 feet of greenway riparian areas and 100 feet from wetlands, and introduce new permitting requirements. During the public comment period, most of the residents who spoke described the ordinance as bureaucratic overreach, including Pine Hill resident Bill Barnum.
Your citizens are not going to understand it if they read it. In my career for 43 years, I never had one person come in and ask me to interpret the Eureka Municipal Code. It's not going to be read. It's going to be violated. Then we set up all those parcels for exposure to violation claims by the city staff based on LIDAR. It just isn't a respectful ordinance. Had a lot more to say. Point this out to you. Eureka is 10.7% smaller in its population today than in 1960. We're shrinking. The average house in Eureka is older than I am, and I'm 71. It's disrespectful to the people of this city to be put under this level of regulation when we all would like you, the city council, to regulate the homeless problem, which does affect the gulches and greenways. Thank you.
Representatives of state and federal environmental agencies vouched for the ordinance, saying it will protect greenways and their benefits of reducing erosion, filtering pollutants, and soaking up stormwater. The three voting council members supported the ordinance, although council member Renee Contreras-Deloach questions its necessity. Council member Leslie Castellano said the legacy of development shows that the ordinance is necessary.
There are many ways of addressing development. If you're still interested in development, you know, this isn't a hard no. You know, this is a way of saying, well, let's then, if you're going to develop, deeply consider the environmental impacts of that development. And I think that's a good thing. You know, we're here on City Council to think about the good of this community for now and for, you know, many years into the future. And I do care deeply about the well-being of folks who are stewarding their land, but also the community, the environment as a whole, and that we are part of a larger and interconnected ecosystem in which we do have a responsibility.
Introduction of the ordinance was unanimously approved. Also approved was introduction of an associated ordinance that updates city codes on tree removal, landscaping, and grading. The ordinances will return to council for final approvals. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In state news, no secret police bill will make California first state to ban police from wearing face coverings, KPFA's David Hummel reports.
In recent immigration raids, masked federal officers have been documented grabbing people off the streets with little to indicate they are ICE agents, In the moment, it is difficult to distinguish whether they are thugs, vigilantes, or legitimate law officers posing a threat to the public and also to the safety of officers themselves. In response, California State Senators Scott Wiener and Jesse Aragon have unveiled SB 627, a measure to boost accountability and public safety. Wiener says the No Secret Police bill will help put an end to unidentifiable law enforcement.
It is critically important that people know who they're interacting with and that they're interacting with actual law enforcement officers. You have ICE agents with police on their jacket, that's like impersonating local police too. So they're creating this chaotic situation. What's happening now also leads to vigilantism. And so it's really important that we get ahead of this.
Officers who do not comply could face a misdemeanor charge. The bill has exemptions for medical masks and SWAT personnel. SB 627 would also require law enforcement to be identifiable through their uniform or other means. The legislation faces backlash from the GOP, including Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson. He denounced the idea of unmasking police officers, saying they would be subject to doxing by, quote, Democratic activists, unquote. This as President Donald Trump repeatedly called for the arrest of protesters wearing masks on social media, writing, quote, "What do these people have to hide and why?" unquote. Government officials, like law enforcement, generally are entitled to fewer privacy protections than the general public. Trump has directed federal immigration officials to prioritize deportations from Democratic-run cities. In a separate social media post, Trump called on ICE to, quote, "do all in their power to achieve the very important goal of delivering the single largest mass deportation program in history." He added that to reach the goals, officials must, quote, "expand efforts to detain and deport," unquote, people in cities such as Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York. Senator Scott Wiener responded to Trump's move, calling it a political attack on his Democratic opponents.
He at least admitted that deporting workers is not a good idea, but now he's back to just saying we're going to round up everyone. And the fact that he's focusing on democratic cities, I think speaks volumes. This is all about a political agenda and payback and going after blue cities. He doesn't care about public safety.
Stephen Miller, White House Deputy Chief of Staff and main architect of Trump's immigration policies, said ICE officers would target at least 3,000 arrests a day, up from about 650 a day during the first 5 months of Trump's second term. At the same time, the Trump administration has directed immigration officers to pause arrests at farms, restaurants, and hotels after Trump reacted to pushback from traditional Republican constituencies about the impact aggressive enforcement is having on those industries. Reporting for KPFA News, I'm David Hummel.
In national news, suspect in shootings of two Democratic lawmakers and spouses arrested as political violence escalates to assassinations, KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The largest manhunt in Minnesota history ended Sunday with the arrest of Vance Bolter, the man accused of shooting two Democratic lawmakers and their spouses Friday. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz spoke to reporters Friday, calling the shootings an unspeakable tragedy.
This was an act of targeted political violence. Peaceful discourse is the foundation of our democracy. We don't settle our differences with violence or at gunpoint.
He described the Minnesota legislature as the most closely divided state legislature in the country, and he stressed the need for debate and compromise, and the need to stand against political violence.
At this precipice moment we're on, this tragic act here in Minnesota should serve as a reminder to all of us. The democracy and the debates in the halls of Congress, in state houses, in school boards, is a way to settle our differences peacefully and move society to a better place.
The shootings led to a massive manhunt that ended Sunday when Vance Bolter was discovered near his home and he surrendered to police. He's been charged with 2 counts of murder for fatally shooting Democratic State Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark in their home. He's also charged with 2 counts of attempted murder for shooting and injuring State Senator John Hoffman, another Democrat, and his wife. Police found documents containing a list of other Democratic elected officials and others, including pro-life activists. Joseph Thompson is acting U.S. attorney for Minnesota.
Political assassinations are rare. They strike at the very core of our democracy.
Thompson spoke at a news conference Monday, along with other law enforcement officials. Alvin Winston is FBI special agent in charge for the Minnesota field office.
This was a targeted attack against individuals who answered the call to public service. The FBI's role in moments like this is clear: to stand alongside our partners, bring federal resources, intelligence capabilities, and reach to the effort, not just to apprehend the individual responsible, but to understand the full scope of the threat. That work continues.
Politicians on both sides of the aisle have condemned the politically motivated shootings, for the most part. Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah posted a message on social media saying, "This is what happens when Marxists don't get their way." He wrote other posts suggesting that Bolter was motivated by leftist ideology, an unsupported conspiracy theory also shared by Elon Musk. Democrats have reacted to that with outrage. Acting U.S. Attorney Thompson shared his own opinion at the news conference.
Look, I mean, this was a political assassination, which is not a word we use very often in the United States, let alone here in Minnesota. It's a chilling attack on our democracy, on our way of life. It's only the most recent example of violent political extremism in this country, and that's a trend that's been increasing in recent years, and that's unfortunate. And I hope it's a wake-up call to everyone that people can disagree with you without being evil or needing to be killed or hurt.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
This is the KMUD News Sports Report for June 20th. Ray Hamill brings you details of all of this week's big local sports stories.
Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have much more on all of the local baseball teams in just a moment as we take a look at all of this week's big local sports stories, including news of the finalists for the 2025 Humboldt Sports Baseball and Softball Players of the Year, where 3 of the most successful student athletes in HDNL history are taking their talents next, and why it was a big week for one local driver at the Redwood Acres Raceway. But first up, it's been a very successful start to the 2025 season for the Humboldt Crabs. The local collegiate summer baseball club stretched their unbeaten start to 12 straight games with a series sweep of the Athletic Edge Express over the weekend, before hitting the road for 6 Pacific Empire League games this week. The Crabs took all 3 games against the Express, winning 5-2, 11-9, and 20-5, with Adam Enyart hitting his team-leading 5th home run of the season in Saturday's victory. Enyart and the team offense has led the way early in the new season, and the Crabs have been averaging almost 9 runs a game through the opening 2 weeks. However, they suffered their first loss of the campaign in their league opener against the Prune Packers in Healdsburg on Tuesday night, falling 11-6. The Crabs would bounce back the following night to beat the Prune Packers 6-3 after scoring 4 clutch runs in the top of the 9th inning. Next up, the Crabs will play 3 games against the Potters in Lincoln this weekend, before returning home to host the Chico Wolves in a single game next Wednesday. In American Legion baseball, it was a busy week for several of the local teams. On Monday, the Northern Humboldt Giants maintained their fast start to the season with a 15-3 win over the Wild Cactus, before falling to the Humboldt Eagles 17U team 6-2 in 8 innings. On Wednesday, the Giants swept 2 games from the Phoenix Pirates, winning 5-2 and 14-4. The Eagles 17U won 2 games this week, In addition to their win over the Giants, the Young Eagles also got the better of Brookings Harbour by a score of 17-2. The Eagles' 19U team also was in action this week, defeating the Southern Humboldt 76ers 16-6 on Tuesday. Four of the local Legion teams, the Giants, Eagles, 17Us, 76ers and Wild Cactus, will be in action at this weekend's Northern Humboldt Giants tournament, which gets underway on Friday and runs for 3 days. The action will take place at McKinleyville High School, with Sunday's championship game set for 5:30 p.m. In local Little League baseball, meanwhile, a busy month of postseason action continued this week. The District 26 Tournament of Champions took place at the Redwood Fields in Cutton, with the Redwood Empire Padres taking home the championship banner. The Padres won all four of their tournament games, including a 3-1 win over the Eel River A's in Tuesday's championship game. Liam Kilgore pitched a gem in the championship game, giving up just one hit in a complete game performance and striking out 12. It was the first Tournament of Champions championship for Redwood Empire Little League in 7 years. Last Friday, meanwhile, the District Junior League All-Star Tournament concluded at Newburg Park in Fortuna. And it was a good week for the McKinleyville Junior All-Stars, who won 5 straight elimination games on the way to winning the title. After an opening round loss to Eel River, McKinleyville battled back through the loser's bracket to get a rematch against Eel River in the championship round. They avenged their earlier tournament loss with an 8-5 win on Thursday to set up a true championship game on Friday night, which they comfortably won 16-0. With the district title secured, the McKinleyville All-Stars will now play in the area tournament in Yuba City, which begins on July 18th. The winner of that tournament will advance to the NorCal State Tournament. The local Little League season continues this weekend with the District 10U and 11U All-Star Tournaments beginning on Saturday. The 10U tournament will take place in Fortuna, while the 11Us will play in Redway, and the winners of both tournaments will advance to the area tournaments. In local high school baseball and softball, the finalists for this year's Humboldt Sports Players of the Year have been announced. The 6 finalists in baseball include Del North's Preston Daniels, McKinleyville's Jackson Kelly, Eureka's Robert Williams, St. Bernard's Luke Brunton, and Arcata's Tanner Keys and Ben Lukens. The 6 softball finalists include South Fork's Mackenzie Coleman, Fortuna's Mariah Bravo and Isabel Sanchez, and Del North's Chloe Smith, Shay Nolan and Carly Harper. The Players of the Year will be announced this weekend. In local high school soccer, meanwhile, one of the best players on the North Coast for the past few seasons has announced where she will play in college. Eureka High's Angelina Conant signed her letter of intent to play for 2-time defending state champion Folsom Lake Community College. Conant and her Eureka teammates Paige Rogers and Lorena Hernandez closed out their high school careers as the most successful ever local student athletes when it comes to the North Coast section. The talented trio helped lead the Loggers to 4 straight NCS championships and are the only HDNL student athletes ever to win 4 straight section crowns with the same team. Rogers and Hernandez recently announced that they will continue their playing careers at College of the Redwoods. And rounding out a busy week in local sports, the second racing night of the Redwood Acres Raceway season took place last weekend, with Raquel Krupa taking the checkered flag in the highlight race of the night, the Upstate Bomber Series main event. Racing returns to the local track this weekend with the always popular Redwood Acres Fair races. The action gets underway on Friday and runs for 2 nights. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr and Michael McCaskill. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Julian Jackson, Ray Hamill, and David Hummel. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on kmud.org. And now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.